G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
realfaith.org.au
High school in particular, start of year seven, was when I really felt it. I realized that, okay, I'm nothing like any of these people. And I went through a lot of time where I had severe depression and anxiety, and I felt like I didn't need to be here anymore just because I felt that the world that I was in wasn't created for someone like me.
Welcome to Real Faith, conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through. Helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life, and real faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Chloe Hayden is a young woman with Asperger's syndrome, a term that she likes to shorten to simply Aspie. This explains the name of her website, Princess Aspian. Chloe is also a guest speaker at many schools and events across Australia as an advocate for young people diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, or ASD. Chloe will be sharing her story with us today, along with her mother, Sarah, who provide for us a parent's perspective. Chloe and Sarah, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Glad to have you with us. And I should say that Chloe is here with me in the studio, and Sarah is joining us via the telephone from her office in Geelong, where she is a social worker specializing in autism. So, Sarah, this is part of your everyday life, explaining what autism is all about?
It is, absolutely. So yes, both in my home and work life, you could say that autism is, yeah, in my life 24/7.
Okay, and I think we should start off defining some terms here. If somebody had never heard of Asperger's syndrome or autism spectrum disorder, how would you explain it to them?
Well, I guess the basic definition of autism is that it's a developmental disorder characterized by difficulties with social interaction and communication with restricted and often repetitive behaviors. Asperger's is on the autism spectrum but has up until recently been defined as its own sort of criteria. Nowadays, we tend to label it as ASD level 1, 2 or 3. Level 1 is what is used to be called Asperger's, is now ASD level 1. And it means that the person with autism has usually got a normal to high IQ, often very good language skills, but they really still struggle with their communication difficulties and things like social skills. Whereas somebody with a level 3 autism diagnosis would require substantial support and often have very severe deficits in verbal and non-verbal social and communication skills, and often has enormous difficulties in their actions.
Okay, so when you hear somebody say, oh, they're on the spectrum, so it could be from very severe on one side of the spectrum to slightly noticeable. Is that how you put it, on the other side, or how would you characterize the other side of the spectrum?
Exactly right, Eric. So, yeah, it's a spectrum because it is vastly different from one person to the next, and mm-hmm. I guess that's one of the difficulties in the change of calling it ASD level 1, 2, or 3, or just saying it's on the spectrum, I think. And Chloe can certainly add to this herself, because she's the one that has Asperger's or autism level 1, is that there used to be a very definitive difference when you say that you have Asperger's. I guess for that person, it's a lot clearer in what they struggle with and what they don't struggle with. So it's it's now sort of changed from the Asperger's to ASD level 1.
Okay, and it's one thing to read a dictionary definition or hear the clinical definition, but it's another thing to experience it yourself. Chloe, when you talk to people, how do you usually tell them what it is?
The thing is, Asperger's is going to be different for everyone. Mm-hmm. Just like every neurotypical person is different, everyone on the spectrum is different. But the way that I found best describes it, in a way that I feel like most people that are on the spectrum can relate to, is it feels like you've crash landed on this alien planet. And this planet.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, well, it's like, that's kind of the way I describe it, mostly to kids, but I've explained it to adults too, and they're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But the way I describe it is, it's like you've crash landed on this alien planet, and it looks a lot like your home planet, but there's a lot of differences which only you seem to be able to see. So,
oh, wow.
So
what's an example of one?
Okay, so things like the lights on this planet are really noisy and very bright, whereas everyone else sees them as, you know, quite dull or quite normal. people interact in ways which don't necessarily make a lot of sense, and they say things they don't mean, like metaphors, like it's raining cats and dogs.
Tell us about that. So you were like 12 years old.
Yes.
And your mother said it's raining cats and dogs. How did you respond?
I went outside genuinely expecting to see cats and dogs, because if someone says something is real, I'm going to believe it's real, because that's what words mean.
So are you saying that a lot of people who have Asperger's don't do metaphors? Is that what you're saying?
No, metaphors, sarcasm. There's like a whole book. I don't remember what it's called, but there's a whole book I saw a while ago, and it was, these are what metaphors are, and this is what the actual meaning is, to like help people on the spectrum to, you know, get the gist. But yeah, like I remember, like mum said, oh, it's raining cats and dogs outside. Genuinely expected to see cats and dogs outside. Didn't. Was really disappointed. Was really upset because I thought I had been lied to. But it was a metaphor. So that would be one of the examples.
Do you remember this, Sarah?
Absolutely. It's not one of many examples in our life.
Oh, now we're going to talk about more of Chloe's journey. But first, let's go back to finding out about your family background in general.
Yeah, sure. So I myself grew up in a non-Christian home. At the age of 20, I fell in love with a non-practicing Irish Catholic, would be the best way that I could explain my husband's faith, I suppose. Mm. He was very much a go-to-Catholic-church-at-Christmas-and-Easter type of person. And I would just tag along with him, I guess, as a duty of his wife over the years. Never really thought much of it and didn't really have much interest in faith at all. I didn't really participate in it, but I was happy to go along, happy to get the children baptized Catholics when they were young. But again, it didn't mean anything to me. I never knew anything about, you know, God or the Bible or Christianity, or had any interest whatsoever in finding out about that religion. You know, for me, it was just non-existent.
Okay, then how did that change?
So we, I guess, started off with having Chloe. We were quite young, in our early 20s. I was told that I would possibly never have children due to a couple of medical conditions that I had. And so we were blessed to have Chloe not long after we were married. And it was in those first few years of marriage that Chloe was she was what we used to call a quirky little genius. She was our first child, and we didn't really know any different, but she wasn't always the easiest child. My husband was working ridiculously long hours, often away from home, and we sort of found ourselves often wondering if this was what, you know, what family life was going to be like, and was there anything else? And there was a period a few years into our marriage when my husband was offered a job quite a few hours from home, and we decided to take it and sort of pack up our family and move actually down to Portland on the southwest coast of Victoria. And it was funny because I had been searching and struggling for a while for, I guess, looking for a faith. I'd sort of started looking at things like Buddhism and all sorts of other things, knowing that there was something out there, but I wasn't quite sure what it was. And I hadn't really been speaking to my husband much because I was very much on my own journey. And it was actually the very week that we moved down to Portland, and I opened up the local paper one day and announced to my husband that I thought that we should go to church, and he was surprised because it was neither Christmas nor Easter. And I was suggesting going to church.
Hey, this is something different.
Absolutely. And the first thing he said to me was, "We'll find out where the local Catholic church is." And I actually said to him, "No, I just want to go to a church." And he was a bit confused and unsure as to what exactly that meant. And we found an ad for what was advertised as a community church. And we thought, well, that sounds interesting. You know, let's go along to that. So, you know, looking back on reflection, I cannot put it down to anything except for God, obviously, was moving very strongly in my life, because up until then, I'd never had any desire to seek out a church. I'd never looked in the paper to try and find a church. And I still am not quite sure, except for the fact that it was definitely God, as to what led us there. So my husband, I think, was intrigued that I was suggesting it and was quite happy to go along. And so 10 o'clock on the Sunday morning, I think Chloe reminded me this morning that the actual reason that we chose that one church out of all of the other ads in the local paper was that it started the latest at 10 o'clock. At that time, very spiritual. And at that time with three children, we thought, oh, that's not too early a time to get up and find a church. And I also liked the fact that it was advertised as a community church. I wasn't even sure what that meant, but it sounded nice.
Yeah.
And we'd just moved to the area, so I thought, well, it's a nice way probably to meet people. And lo and behold, a couple of days later, we found ourselves in a community church at 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and our kids were as confused as my husband was as to what we were doing in church when it wasn't a holy celebration, and so there was no reason to be going there. But very quickly and powerfully, within weeks of both my husband and myself and the kids going there, we were, I guess the only way you can say it without sounding corny is we were all powerfully saved. So, yeah, it's quite a strange journey to Christianity. I like to explain it that there was a God-shaped void in my heart and we were looking for that to be filled, and it wasn't going to be filled until we found exactly that.
And your husband became a Christian as well?
Absolutely. So within weeks, we were both water baptized. He even looked
back.
Wow,
you guys weren't messing around. You went.
No, we weren't. Not the whole family. He looks back now, and even he says that, you know, God must have put blinkers on his eyes, because as a non-practicing Irish Catholic, he said that he never would have stepped foot into, you know, the kind of church that we actually turned up at.
Yeah.
And then within weeks got water baptized and were immersed very quickly and very deeply into the church and into the faith and became, you know, servants in the church. And
you were immersed very deeply, literally and figuratively.
Absolutely.
Like the water baptism.
Were. Absolutely. Yeah, that is exactly correct.
I couldn't pass that one up.
Yeah, and he looks back now and sort of says, wow, you know, he can't actually believe that, you know, he went along with it, because if he stopped and thought about it, he wouldn't have.
Yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but at one point he became a lay pastor, is that right?
Exactly right, yes. So he still passionately serves in church, especially in men's ministry, mm-hmm. is where his heart is. He works
great.
Full-time in a totally different industry, but, yeah, serves and loves the church.
Okay, so Chloe, growing up, initially your parents just went to church twice a year. What did you think when they started to all of a sudden go to church?
I guess I kind of had the same thing as mom. I was like 12 when I started going to church, so I didn't really have it on the same level, you know, as in the whole I'm searching for something. But I remember growing up, I'd always been almost kind of scared of church and kind of scared of what religion was. I went to a Catholic primary school and, you know, we did like mass every couple of days or whatever at school. And the teachers there were very religious Christians, if that makes sense. That they were the sort of Christians that go, this is how it is and you can't be different and you have to act like this and be like this. And, you know, if you're not this, we're going to treat you differently. And one of the schools I went to, it was in primary school in prep, and we had a candle that the priest would come in and light, and we could only pray if that candle was being held. You weren't allowed to pray to Jesus unless you were holding a candle that the priest had lit. Yeah,
well,
it was a bit, you know. But I was holding the candle, it was my turn to pray, and I sneezed on it and the candle blew out. and I was like, oops, silly me, like whatever. And the teacher was horrified and screamed at me and kicked me out of the classroom and gave me a detention saying, you blew out Jesus Christ, now no one is able to pray today.
Are you serious?
Not kidding. Like,
really?
Not kidding. So my initial reactions to Jesus was, oh, this guy's pretty scary. I don't know if I want to hang out with him very much. You know,
I sneezed and he went away.
I sneezed on him and now we're all doomed. So I didn't really, yeah, I was like, oh, don't know. But then I went.
Single-handedly blew out Jesus.
Yeah, totally.
Wow, that is bizarre.
Yeah, so like, yeah, my initial reactions to Christianity was like, oh, this is a bit peculiar. But then when I was 12 and we went to this church, I liked it. Like, we had a cool band there and there was like the bass guitar and the drums and stuff. And I was like, oh, this is fun. This is cool. I like this. We went to the youth group and I started kind of understanding, you know, what actual Jesus was, not, you know, blowing out the candle Jesus. And I was like, oh, this Jesus sounds like a pretty cool dude. I was going through a kind of rough time in my life. Then I was 12. I was going into high school. High school is bad for anyone. But when you're on the spectrum and when you're undiagnosed on the spectrum, it's twice as hard. And I was just going through a really hard time. And I remember we went to a conference, like a really big conference, maybe about a month after we started going to this church. And it was just me and my dad that went together. And he was like, you know, you're a kid. You can go down to the mosh pit if you want and hang out there. And I was like, you know what? Okay, that sounds fun. And we were doing worship there. And I just started bawling my eyes out, and I've never been that sort of person before. I just started sobbing my heart out, and these people came over and prayed for me, and it was like the first time that I had like felt Jesus and felt what he was.
So you had a genuine encounter with God.
Yeah, and I've never had that before. And I guess I was kind of going through this kind of phase of going like, okay, I know we're going to church, I know it's fun, I know the people there are cool, I know that we go out jet skiing after each week, I know it's a fun thing that we do, but what's the point?
And
it wasn't until I went to that conference and I had that encounter that I was like, it all makes sense now. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we had all been like saved before, like we'd been water baptized and stuff, but I hadn't necessarily like been saved inside. Does that make sense?
You know? Not to this depth.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I didn't feel like I was like, I'm like, okay, I know there's this guy called Jesus and I know that he loves us, but like, what is Jesus?
Yeah, and like, I mean, there's one thing knowing something intellectually.
Totally. It's another thing. I just didn't feel it inside.
And in
I'm sort of. Yeah. And this thing, like, I'm the sort of person, like, I need to feel something. Like, I need to emotionally connect to something to go, this is real. And that first time was like the most real thing that I have ever felt.
Our guest today is Chloe Hayden, who's a young woman with Asperger's syndrome, who's also an advocate for young people diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, or ASD. Also joining us today is her mother, Sarah, who's a social worker specializing in autism. We'll hear more of Chloe's story when we return right here on Real Faith.
Looking for resources to grow your faith? Check out Vision Christian Store with books, movies, audio CDs, DVD resources and more. Plus, free delivery on orders over $50. See visionstore.org.au.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scadabo, and our guest today is Chloe Hayden, who's a young woman with Asperger's syndrome, and she's also an advocate for young people diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. Also joining us today via the telephone from her office in Geelong is Chloe's mother, Sarah, who's a social worker who specializes in autism. Now here's more of Chloe's story. Getting back to Chloe's growing up with Asperger's, but obviously you didn't know about it at first. Did you notice anything was a bit different?
I guess on reflection now, I can, as an experienced parent and also obviously a social worker that works with lots of families with children on the autism spectrum, I can look at it now and go, wow, how did I miss that? The only thing that makes me feel better about that is my own father is a doctor and my mum is a nurse, and even neither of them ever thought anything was different or suggested it. So I guess one of the things that's, you know, especially girls on the spectrum, it is not uncommon for them to be diagnosed much later because they are very hard to diagnose, and they can be very clever at what we call masking the symptoms of autism. And, you know, particularly in the Asperger's or, you know, level 1/higher functioning children with autism, it can be quite difficult. But yes, looking back now, you know, as I said, I was a fairly young mum. I was told that I possibly wouldn't have children. I had suffered severe endometriosis for many years, and my doctor at the time had said, you know, you're married, I would be trying to have a child if you can while you're young, because the older you get, the less likely you're going to be. And we were very blessed that we had Chloe, you know, straight away. 22 years ago, we were relatively young parents, in our early 20s, you know, no previous experience of children. And because she was our first child, we had, I guess, nothing to compare it to.
Yeah, right.
She was an incredibly sensitive little girl. As I think I said earlier, we used to call her our quirky genius. She was an incredibly intelligent but also very, very sensitive little girl. She,
when you say sensitive, sensitive like emotionally, or how sensitive?
Everything. Sensitive emotionally.
All of the above.
Physically. Okay.
So, yeah, she would, I guess, you know, looking right back, I mean, even as a very, very young baby, if I put any kind of clothing on her that she didn't like, she would scream and try and rip it off. She was incredibly sensitive to certain fabrics, to tags, to lights, to sounds, to smells. I used to just think she was a fussy baby. She would cry a lot. She wouldn't sleep unless she was either on myself or my husband. She was literally attached to us 24/7. So we co-slept with her, but it wasn't enough for her just to be in between us. She had to be on top of us and then something on top of her. She sort of needed to have deep pressure with us, sort of arms wrapped around her, almost like a little, we used to call her a little koala bear, because she'd sort of be wrapped around you and you'd have to be wrapped around her. And if you took your arms off her, she'd start screaming. She was incredibly clingy. She was very emotional, but she was also highly intelligent, where she would very early on read encyclopedias and fact books and liked to, you know, let people know about all of the facts of the world. And she really didn't care whether you were interested or not. She was going to share that knowledge, that knowledge with
changed.
You. She was quite quite unable to read, you know, social cues, and it really wasn't bothered at all whether you were engaging in conversation with her. She would just sit there and reel off these facts that she thought that you would find as remarkable as she did. And she really wasn't bothered whether you were engaging in any kind of conversation. She would just continue on. And to be honest, to an extent, she's still exactly like that now.
but seriously, that is one of the characteristics of
Absolutely.
Asperger's.
Looking back now, yes.
Is not I getting often social laugh because, cues?
Exactly right. I often laugh now because obviously in my role, I'm often speaking to families about this exact thing. And now I'm always looking at sort of the, I guess, what you call the checklist of, you know, autism, especially in young girls. And now I sit there and I look at it and I go, tick, 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 tick. You know, like every single thing, of course, Chloe had. But I guess because I really didn't know, I mean, I'll be honest with you, the only experience of autism that I had ever had was watching the movie Rain Man. You would have remembered.
Yep, yep, of course. Yep.
Tom Cruise, and he was autistic, and to me that's what autism was, so I didn't know anything about it. It wouldn't have even occurred to me that there was, you know, anything different about our girl, or certainly not autism. So it had never come across my personal radar.
Yeah.
And I certainly had no knowledge of it whatsoever. But yes, she was certainly a very fussy little child. And I guess it wasn't until a few years later that her younger sister, who's 4 years younger and incredibly neurotypical, in other words, you know, not on the spectrum, and you know, an incredibly social, outgoing, resilient little girl, that I started to realize how vastly different Chloe was to her.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Chloe, just growing up, did you feel that you were different, or how did you kind of know that, hey, I'm not like the other people?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think growing up my entire life, I've always felt different. I always felt like the odd one out. Like at school, in particular, I guess, was the main one, because all the kids there like acted the same and did the same things and liked the same things and just kind of worked in the same way.
But they weren't reading the encyclopedia.
Oh, no, well, that's exactly it. See, I was the weirdo. And, like, all these kids are the same. And growing up, like, in primary school, that's kind of okay. Like, in primary school, you're kind of allowed to be yourself. You're kind of allowed to be a little bit quirky, a little bit weird, a little bit individual. High school in particular, start of year seven, was when I really felt it. Because, like Mum said, we moved to Portland when I was in year seven, and that was a very beachy town. I went to, the first high school I went to was a private high school where on the beach, and they were all surfers, and all of the girls had tan skin and blue eyes and long blonde hair, and all like beautiful Barbie dolls, and I was none of that. And they all liked the same things. They're all like into boys and magazines and jewelry and makeup and clothes, and I just wanted to hang out with my horses and care about none of that. I realized that, okay, I'm nothing like any of these people. And at the start, I was kind of like, oh, you know, that's okay, because I had a home unit. I had a family unit. I had people who I knew loved me for who I was.
Yep.
But it starts to wear on you after some time. And I think even the strongest people are eventually going to be like, I don't fit in, so what's the point? And I went through a lot of time where I had severe depression and anxiety, and I felt like I didn't need to be here anymore, just because I felt that the world that I was in wasn't created for someone like me.
So, Sarah, at this point, do you have any idea what is going on inside of your daughter? Tell us what was happening then for you too.
Eric, we didn't. I mean, she was she was approaching being a teenager. Things were just getting worse by the day. It didn't matter what we were doing, where we were searching. It just seemed that things were getting darker and darker, and we just knew that something was going on, but we had absolutely no idea what it was.
Okay, we're going to stop it right there because we've run out of time for this first conversation with Chloe Hayden and her mother, Sarah. At this point, we're hearing that she's undiagnosed and has no idea what's going on, and things are getting very bad in her life. But things get much better when she gets diagnosed, and she is now helping others. So is it okay if we have Chloe and Sarah have you both back for part two of
Absolutely.
This conversation? Will that be all right?
Absolutely.
We would love to be back again. Thank you.
Okay, well, we invite you to come back for part two of our conversation with Chloe Hayden. Chloe is a young woman with Asperger's syndrome, and she has a website called princessaspian.com, and she's an advocate for young people with autism spectrum disorder. We'll have more of this conversation with Chloe Hayden and her mother, Sarah, next time.
You've been listening to Real Faith, and if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join us again next time for more conversations about God working in the lives of people who put their faith and trust in Him. That's real people, real life, and real faith.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.